Me. Hey, guys. Welcome to the show. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. Should have put out a tweet. Today's show, Phil Giraldi. I'm trying to hear back from some people. I got a few guests lined up for the rest of the week, but can't seem to get anybody else on today. Oh, you know who I meant to email? Well, maybe I'll remember it at the next break. Let's see, that's Liberty Radio Network. Oops. .com. All right. That there. No link to the chat room today because there's no chat room today, or at least, actually, that's not really true. If you use an external type application and you know how to use IRC free node thingamajig, then it's hashtag Scott Horton Show. But I ain't in there because I don't know how to do that. I always just go to scotthorton.org/chat. But my website is broken right now. So, there you go. I don't know what's taking so long. Maybe it'll get fixed someday. I guess it's possible. Ooh, reopen closed tab. That's interesting. Anyway. So it's my show. It's libertarian foreign policy mostly. Also cops and money. But mostly the wars. There's lots of wars. Thanks to Ernie Hancock for having me on his show earlier. We got to talk about the Cold War, the new Cold War with Russia. And that was a good time. And he's going to have me back to talk about Syria and Yemen here pretty soon, too. What a bunch of freaks and kooks. You guys on Twitter? I need to just go ahead and get the Twitter chip and plant it in my brain so I don't have to get distracted looking over here to the right. I can just look straight ahead and just read tweets and laugh at how stupid everybody is. Anyway, if you're like me, then you're the same way. And now listen, this went into break time yesterday and you didn't get to hear all of it. But after today's show, there is a thing happening with our friend Gareth Porter participating. It's going to be basically a big fat Google Hangout with a bunch of, I don't know who, I guess wonky types. And it's going to be all about foreign policy, and it's reinvent.net. Reinvent foreign policy is the name of the thing. And if I don't space it out, then I'll try to remember to remind you guys at the end of the show, too, so we can all head over there and watch Gareth's talk, which is going to be about, you know, the empire and how we don't need one. Reinvent.net. is where that's taking place, and it's at 2 Eastern time. 2 Eastern time, right after this show. We'll just all head right over there. Support the great Gareth Porter. All right. Bovard, Friday. Jim Bovard. McGovern, tomorrow, Wednesday. Ann Jones, on Thursday. That's all coming up on the show. Good old Bovard, man. I don't talk to him often enough. All right. Now, here's the thing. I really don't know anything about all the crybaby stuff on campus right now. There's a thing at Yale, and there's a thing at Missouri. And I read somewhere there was like a police brutality issue involved in Missouri, so that's a real thing. But most of what I'm seeing, and I'm telling you up front, I'm not paying close attention. I'm paying attention to important things, but I see this stuff in my Twitter feed all day. And so I am compelled to comment on it. Oh, what a bunch of little crybabies. Whatever happened to sticks and stones and break my bones, but names will never hurt me and all that kind of thing. In this society, we have conflated victim and hero to such an extent now that that people are proud to exaggerate their weakness and helplessness. It's ridiculous. You know? It's like watching soccer where in foreign countries. You ever watch soccer where they go, oh no, win, my ankle. And they're totally faking it. Oh, did you see that? He tripped me. Win. Where they completely exaggerate all the fouls. It's pathetic. What a pathetic, stupid game. And anyway, all these college kids need is a friend who will look them right in the eye and tell them, "Wah, oh, boo-hoo for you, little tiny crybaby. I guess your feelings are real sad." And then when they start crying more, then say to them, "Oh, wah," some more. Until finally they have to stop. Because nobody likes being told, "Oh, boo-hoo, I understand your feelings are very hurt." And that's how to make people stop being crybabies. Just cry at them. When they start crying, go, "Oh, yeah, I know, me too." Eh. Didn't you people have friends when you were growing up? Didn't they help you to rub off your rough edges a little bit there? Toughen up your tiny little pathetic helpless feelings? "Oh, someone made me feel uncomfortable." Yeah? I don't know. It just seems so silly. You know? Where I'm from, you take a slam. Well, I'm a vert skater. You take a slam. You don't lay there on the flat bottom and go, "Oh, man, everybody look at me and how hurt I am." If you can, you get up. And you get up as fast as you can and get the hell out of the way. Even if you're a little kid. If you can walk. Even if you can't breathe, even if you got the wind knocked out of you, still, get up and get the hell off the flat bottom. What is this, European soccer, where we all lay around going, "Where my ankle? Time out! Everyone stop!" When it doesn't even really hurt? I'd like to say this is why I didn't go to college, but it's not, but I imagine I would have pointed my finger and said, "Whoa, where?" And a lot of liberals had I gone. But anyway, that's the solution. Ridicule. Simple as that. That will solve your political correctness. And, you know, I'm all for legit political correctness. I'm completely anti-racist. I'm an individualist. But that doesn't mean I gotta suffer crybabies. You know, I made a joke the other day about... I made a joke the other day about a certain left-wing run business that is not run like a business because it's run by left-wingers, and how, therefore, it's run terribly. Because I was just trying to make a point, like to try to get to it. They don't have a Jewish accountant who at the end of the day can tell them that this isn't working as a business model. Right? Everything comes down to a political fight over who's friends with who. And at the end of the day, there's no real businessman with a bottom line in black ink. And you know what happened? "Oh, man, you're an anti-Semite." I swear to God, this happened among adults. "I can't believe you said a terrible thing about Jews." What? I implied that Jews are talented businessmen? And mathematicians? For Christ's sake, I wasn't making fun of Jews. I was making fun of communists. I was saying they could use the help of a Jew in like a jokey kind of way that like, cause they're good at business. Oh no. Oh, everybody's tiny little feelings. Give me a break. Yeah, I married a Jew. That's because I'm such an anti-Semite. And well, I'm really bad at being one anyway. Hey, I'll Scott Horton here. It's always safe to say that one should keep at least some of your savings in precious metals as a hedge against inflation. And if this economy ever does heat back up and the banks start expanding credit, rising prices could make metals a very profitable bet. Since 1977, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage Inc. has been helping people buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, and they do it well. They're fast, reliable, and trusted for more than 35 years. and they take Bitcoin. Call Robertson Robertson at 1-800-874-9760 or stop by rrbi.co.
Don't you get sick of the Israel lobby trying to get us into more wars in the Middle East? Or always abusing Palestinians with your tax dollars? It once seemed like the lobby would always have full-spectrum dominance on the foreign policy discussion in D.C. But those days are over. The Council for the National Interest is the America lobby, standing up and pushing back against the Israel lobby's undue influence on Capitol Hill. Go show some support at councilforthenationalinterest.org. That's councilforthenationalinterest.org.
All right, I'm Scott. It's my show. Tons of bad news. We should talk about it, I guess, here. Iraq military update, three moves against Islamic State foundering by Mitchell Prothero. Still writing for McClatchy for now, anyway. Irrible. Iraqi forces' hopes of recapturing the city of Ramadi from the Islamic State have stalled, largely because their effort to cut resupply routes into the city of nearly a million have failed. Iraqi planners had hoped to cordon around the city, the capital of Anbar province, Iraq's largest, would prevent the Islamic State from being able to prepare for a long siege. But local military commanders, residents, and analysts say the Iraqi forces were unable to maintain the cordon and that the Islamic State has been able to resupply. Iraqi officials have announced a new operation to retake the city nearly every week since the Islamic State routed its defenders last spring. But despite the vows, it's become clear that the government has neither the manpower nor the training to conduct an offensive in a huge city that remains packed with civilians. The Islamic State apparently has succeeded in keeping civilians from fleeing. Daesh learned from other battles that if you let the civilians flee, then it makes it easier for the coalition to use air power, said one Western military advisor to the Iraqi government, who asked not to be identified in order to speak freely about what he described as a failed military operation. On November 5th, Iraqi planes flooded the city with leaflets warning Ramadi residents to flee a coming offensive. Local residents said the move served only to increase the number of Islamic State checkpoints to keep people from leaving. The Islamic State also built new defensive positions that included huge numbers of roadside bombs and mined buildings to fend off any assault. Hey, they couldn't hold on to it. How the hell are they supposed to take it back? Daesh had been preparing all summer by planting IEDs and building bunkers to protect their fighters from jets, one resident said by phone, declining for security reasons to be identified. But now the number of checkpoints has doubled after the government told everyone to leave. People are afraid to leave their homes to buy bread for fear of being accused of trying to escape, the resident said. And they're afraid to stay in their homes because the city is now one huge bomb waiting for the government. The Islamic State's use of roadside bombs is extensive. In one clearing operation in the town of Baghdadi near Ramadi, security forces dismantled at least 62 roadside bombs in one afternoon in a one-mile stretch of highway. Residents say the militants have also managed to hold the road linking Ramadi to the Islamic State strongholds of Abu Kamal and Deir al-Zur in Syria, leaving them well-positioned to resupply even when airstrikes successfully target ammunition depots. Local residents are also skeptical about recent military operations that the government has claimed as successes. A commando raid on October 28th that the Iraqi government's Anbar Operations Center claimed had killed nine top Islamic State officials and destroyed an ammunition dump accomplished little, they said. They were able to replace everything they lost in an hour, the resident reached by phone said. The roads to Syria are open, and the fighters have spent all summer digging positions to prevent them to protect themselves from airstrikes. In nearby Fallujah, with 500,000 residents, Anbar's second largest city, both Iraqi and Western military advisors say Iraqi government troops have been more effective in targeting key Islamic State areas, but the Iraqi government remains focused on retaking Ramadi, despite the recommendation from American officials that recapturing Fallujah is more likely to be a success. One key reason for the better Iraqi position in Fallujah, according to an Iraqi security official and a Western military advisor, is more active participation in combat operations there by U.S. Special Operations Forces. According to the advisor, and confirmed by the Iraqi official, both of whom asked not to be identified, the Marine Corps special operators may be doing more than mentoring Iraqi troops. There are a lot of bad guys in Fallujah getting shot in the head from pretty far away, outside the capability of the mentored troops, said the advisor. Wink, nudge, elbow in your ribs. That was my quote there, the last part. There was no immediate comment from the U.S. officials in the U.S. The role of U.S. Special Operations Forces in Iraq recently drew attention when a member of the Army's elite Delta Force died during a raid with Kurdish forces on an Islamic State prison. Delta Force operators are also assisting for a long-planned Kurdish assault to retake Sinjar in northern Iraq. The city, whose capture by the Islamic State in August 2014 provided the pretext, the impetus, Mitch writes, for Obama to begin air operations in Iraq. Despite offensives to rescue thousands of Yazidis who escaped the Islamic State capture of Sinjar by fleeing into the nearby Sinjar Mountains, the city itself has remained under Islamic State control. An operation to recapture Sinjar has been delayed by disputes between the Kurdish Peshmerga militia, the unofficial military force of the Kurdish regional government, Iraq's autonomous Kurdish region, and the Kurdistan Workers' Party, the Turkish insurgent group known as the PKK, which played a major role in rescuing the Yazidis and turning back Islamic State fighters last year. Quote, the PKK want to be the heroes who liberate Sinjar, while the Peshmerga just want to conduct a proper operation to liberate the city, said Helgurd Hikmet, Director General of the Peshmerga Media Affairs Directorate. We need to come to an agreement over who will administer Sinjar, which is part of Iraq. But the PKK have a regional agenda involving Turkey that we and the KRG refuse to be involved in. That's right, the Iraqi Kurdish government gets along very well with the Turkish government and doesn't want that kind of problem. The PKK has been fighting a three-decade-long insurgency against the Turkish government and is closely linked to a Syrian Kurdish militia, the People's Protection Units, or YPG, which, with U.S. assistance, has waged a successful campaign against the Islamic State in northern Syria. Well, somewhat. Kicked them out of Kobani. But both groups are viewed as terrorist organizations by the Turkish government. And the PKK is on the State Department list as well, of course. Bill Clinton helped the Turks in their huge war against the Kurds back in the 90s. But anyway. Both groups are viewed as terrorist organizations by the Turkish government, and any role they have in administering a recaptured Sinjar would set off alarm bells in Turkey, which fears the establishment of any PKK-administered area would encourage the PKK to pursue autonomy for Turkey's Kurdish population. The Western military advisor also said Delta Force was unwilling to participate in a Sinjar operation after news networks broadcast live from near the scene. I'm sure there's a serious fight between the KRG and PKK over Kurdish stuff, but Delta, who had just lost a guy, was furious to be watching CNN reporting live from just outside the battle space about how in the coming days there would be an invasion, said the advisor, who is close to both U.S. and British military units. Delta really doesn't like to tell people when it's coming, so they called the mission off. Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, they don't like to report their casualties either, except when the Democrats can make a PR stunt about it and escalate the war based on it. So, a bit more discussion of this. I'm sorry I'm out of time. At least I had time to read the thing. But that's Prothro at McClatchy, and we'll be right back with Phil Giraldi in just a minute. You hate government? One of them libertarian types? Or maybe you just can't stand the president, gun grabbers, or warmongers? Me too. That's why I invented LibertyStickers.com. Well, Rick owns it now, and I didn't make up all of them, but still. If you're driving around and want to tell everyone else how wrong their politics are, there's only one place to go. LibertyStickers.com has got your bumper covered. Left, right, libertarian, empire, police state, founders quote, central banking. Yes, bumper stickers about central banking. Lots of them. And, well, everything that matters. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. Hey, I'll Scott Horton here for MPV Engineering. This isn't for all of you, but for high-end contractors specializing in industrial construction and end users who own and operate industrial equipment. MPV offers licensed professional consulting on chemical and mechanical engineering for your projects. Tanks, pressure vessels, piping, heat exchangers, HVAC equipment, chemical reactors for oil companies or manufacturing facilities, as well as project management support and troubleshooting for those implementing designs. MPV will get your industrial project up and running. Head over to mpvengineering.com. Man, I bet if I told you guys that the New York Times published an article by Philip Giraldi about the deep state, that you would say, nuh-uh, really? Or something like that. That's what I said when Eric Garris let me know. And yet, I already knew that they had published an article by someone about an article that Phil had written in the American Conservative, and I thought, that's pretty good for the New York Times, but now, no, really, look. At nytimes.com, America's establishment has embraced deep states. It's Phil Giraldi, former CIA and DIA officer, executive director of the Council for the National Interest, regular writer for UNS.com and the American Conservative Magazine. And I guess I probably shouldn't ask you how you got this article in the New York Times, Phil. Welcome back to the show.
Well, actually, they approached me. They one of their editors contacted me through Ron Unz and asked if I would do a piece on the deep state for them. And I was in Italy at the time, actually, and I had to take a work break, and I wrote the piece for them, and sure enough, it appeared about 10 days later.
Amazing. And hey, yeah. It's a good one, too. Now, so what exactly is a deep state? Because if such a thing exists, I'm sure it only exists somewhere far away from here, but I don't know. Tell them.
Well, I mean, deep state is essentially the secret state. This, you know, you can call it anything you want. Deep state is a popular name for it because it comes from the Turkish originally, where Turkey has long had a widely recognized deep state, a secret state, which works behind the scenes essentially to do things when it perceives that the government, the elected government, has gone too far. And this is, of course, from the perspective of the national security state, from the military and that kind of thing. So it's a definitely a perspective issue. And my article basically points out that for the United States to look the other way when countries like Turkey and Egypt cited are engaging in deep state as it essentially is damaging to democratic institutions. And of course, the implication is that we have a deep state also in the United States, which is more comfortable with the deep states in places like Egypt and Turkey, because it gives us, quote, stability.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you know, especially in Egypt, I mean, that seems to me such a special case where you really had virtually all of the population of the whole damn country wanted a revolution, wanted rid of Mubarak, wanted to rein in the military state and have elections. And they had some. The Conservative Party won. And then the whole damn thing was canceled after a year and a half with, you know, as you reported on this show and in print back before it even happened, as it was happening with Saudi and American backing, they were even, as you described it, basically bribing rent-a-mobs, Iran 53 style, to try to destabilize the capital city of Cairo there in order to set the stage for the coup, the military coup and counter-revolution. And it seems like that's the, if there's one country where the Americans maybe even could have convinced the military to go ahead and let this play out a little bit and have a little bit less role for them in domestic affairs and more role for an actual elected government, even if it includes the Muslim Brotherhood, that maybe they could have done that. And yet they're in such a hurry to side with this deep state against the people of Egypt, and all they've done is so dissension and you know, justify every prediction that Ayman al-Zawahiri ever made about how America would ever treat democracy if it ever really came to Egypt, you know?
Yeah, that's exactly the case. And also, of course, we're seeing now the blowback from this, which is essentially that by doing this sort of thing, by supporting basically one kind of faction within a very complex society, you're basically creating potential for terrorism, which we're seeing in Egypt, bringing down an airplane. We're creating a situation where democracy, the possibility of Egypt becoming a functional democracy probably has been pushed back for 20 years.
Yeah. And now, well, and to that, too, I guess to conservatives listening, they might think I'm completely crazy, but Am I right that really the Muslim Brotherhood ain't too much further to the right than the Republicans, and that they're a far cry from a movement like Al-Qaeda of a bunch of radical, basically Islamist, Leninist crazies?
Well, the problem with them from the perspective of Saudi Arabia and the United States is the fact that they essentially are a group that is critical, highly critical of the established regimes in the Arab world. And so naturally Saudi Arabia is terrified of that kind of thing. They don't want one man, one vote, or one woman, one vote, that's for sure. And so this is why they intervened or pushed back on this situation. So that's why they're seen as a threat, because they want basically more democracy. And we got onto the bandwagon because we perceived wrongly that this would be a more stable or manageable situation from the point of view of the interests of the United States and, of course, Israel. And so we got into it. And these, of course, my point being that these, of course, are wrong judgments. The fact is that that Egypt initially would have had a shaking out period with the new government and so on and so forth. But the government was already giving signs that it was moving away from some of its radical rhetoric. And we didn't allow that to develop. We didn't allow that to happen.
Mm-hmm. Well, they certainly, you know, under the year-long, year-and-a-half-long Morsi regime there, year-long, I guess, they didn't make any moves against Israel on the Rafah border crossing or anything like that. I mean, I think they lightened up trade of just medical resources and just a few things a little bit, but they made themselves clear that don't worry about us, Israel. We're not going back on Camp David or our deep state's relationship with yours, but that still wasn't good enough.
Yeah, that's right. In fact, they were very careful not to go too far on the issue of the relationship with Israel and the relationship with the Palestinians. They did not sort of throw open the borders and rush in with what Israel's always kind of claiming, weapons and that kind of thing. Nothing like that happened. But the fact was that they proceeded being on the side of caution. The Israelis and the Americans felt that this Muslim Brotherhood and presence was dangerous, and they had not demonstrated that they were dangerous. But again, this is one of the many misjudgments that the United States has gotten sucked into in the Middle East.
You know, even at the time, I was joking that surely Zawahiri's going to be putting out a podcast saying, "See, I told you so." And then it was only this year, Phil, that I actually found out that he did. In the summer of 2013, after the coup, he put out a podcast saying, "See, this is exactly what I told you the Americans would do. If you participate in democracy and you actually win, they'll cancel it on you. You're damn fools. You should have been suicide bombers like me and my guys all along."
Yeah. And of course, the preceding event that was very similar to this was how they canceled the elections to the Palestinians that brought Hamas into power in Gaza, and indeed they had a majority overall among the Palestinians. But of course, we and the Israelis canceled that election too. So it just shows that essentially there is a great deal of hypocrisy, and I'm being very nice using that word, because it goes beyond hypocrisy in terms of how the United States sees its role in the Middle East and elsewhere in the world. And, you know, it doesn't take a genius among the people who live in these countries to realize just what we're doing and how stupid and how bad it is. And this is, and when people wonder why our foreign policy is as screwed up as it is, well, the answer is pretty simple, actually.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's Phil Giraldi. He's a former CIA officer. Here he is writing in the New York Times, for crying out loud. America's establishment has embraced deep states. And when we get back from this break, we're going to talk about our deep state's embrace of the Turkish deep state and the evolving nature of that relationship, such as it is, and the war in Syria. And then we got to get to this other great article, what Obama should have told Benjamin Netanyahu. This one is at UNS.com. We'll be right back after this with Phil Giraldi. Hey, all Scott here. First, I want to take a second to thank all the show's listeners, sponsors, and supporters for helping make this show what it is. I literally couldn't do it without you. And now I want to tell you about the newest way to help support the show. Whenever you shop at Amazon.com, stop by ScottHorton.org first and just click the Amazon logo on the right side of the page. That way the show will get a kickback from Amazon's end of the sale. It won't cost you an extra cent. And it's not just books. Amazon.com sells just about everything in the world except cars, I think. So whatever you need, they've got it. Just click the Amazon logo on the right side of the page at ScottHorton.org or go to ScottHorton.org/Amazon. This part of the Scott Horton Show is sponsored by Audible.com. And right now, if you go to audibletrial.com/Scott Horton Show, you can get your first audiobook for free. Of course, I'm recommending Michael Swanson's book, The War State, The Cold War Origins of the Military-Industrial Complex and the Power Elite. Maybe you've already bought The War State in paperback, but you just can't find the time to read it. Well, now you can listen while you're out marching around. Get the free audiobook of The War State by Michael Swanson, produced by Listen and Think Audio, at audibletrial.com/Scott Horton Show. All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. I'm talking with Phil Giraldi. America's establishment, our deep state, has embraced deep states. That's Phil Giraldi's article in the New York Times. In the New York Times. And now, so let's talk a little bit about America's relationship with Turkey here, because... Well, I guess the way I understand it is the American military and intelligence agencies are very tight with Turkey's Kemalist, elitist military and national intelligence services that date back to, you know, the formation of the Turkish state and all that. But, I guess I'm not so certain of their relationship with Erdogan, the, elected president and the leader of a, I believe a decisive majority in their parliament now, although they sure do seem to agree with him about backing Al-Qaeda in Syria all these years. So I guess I don't know how bad the split really is, Phil, but what do you think?
Well, on the side of the Turks, I mean, Erdogan needs to legitimize what he's been doing militarily, which is mostly, and in fact overwhelmingly, attacking the Kurds and not attacking ISIS and not attacking Al-Qaeda. And so he needs to legitimize that by being part of this NATO effort. So that's his motive for being in it. And the United States basically needs Turkey for other reasons, like, for example, to be able to run bombing raids from the Incirlik air base, which is in southern Turkey, and also for reasons of intelligence and stuff like that. Turks have better sources in terms of what's going on than we do. So there is a certain connection, but at the same time, Erdogan is playing his own game. He's got, he has replaced a lot of the generals and senior officers, in the military because he wants his own men there, and the military's ability to kind of go against the president and have an independent relationship with the United States has been much eroded. So it's kind of a funny situation. There certainly I wouldn't trust Erdogan at all. He's basically not interested in defeating ISIS. And he's more interested in getting rid of Assad for various reasons and keeping the Kurds from uniting in any way in Syria, Iran, and in southern Turkey.
Well, so that's not too much different than the American government's pretended interests here anyway, right? Not attacking the Islamic State, not attacking Al-Qaeda, getting rid of Assad.
Yeah, that's exactly true to a certain extent. They have a community of interest in terms of getting rid of Assad, which I've never quite understood for either one of them. Turkey is probably right in terms of its fear of development of a Kurdish state if the whole situation in their region were to go under. But at the same time, Assad was kind of a guarantor that would not happen. And Assad has also been a guarantor that Syria would remain a stable entity without becoming a home for terrorists. But, you know, the United States, for odd reasons, I think the usual liberal-type reasons, you know, responsibility to protect and all that kind of thing, they went a little bit crazy on that, just as they did with Gaddafi. And this leads to unfortunate consequences.
Well, they seem to be somewhat backing down from that now and saying, well, okay, we got to get rid of Assad, but we don't want to abolish the entire state of Syria and repeat that part of the Iraq disaster, at least, that kind of thing. But I mean, then again, their bluff has been called by the Russians at this point. So what do the Turks or the Americans think that they're going to do? How much money and weapons can they give to Al-Qaeda to fight against a Russian-backed, an outright Russian-backed Syrian army?
Well, I think the reality is that it has come home to them. Unless the Turks are willing to intervene massively on the ground, they're not going to change the status quo in Syria, and they're not willing to do that. The popular opinion in Turkey is strongly against it, and Turkish politicians recognize this would be a very bad step. Now, the United States has also backed off from removing Assad in the talks that are going on in Vienna. Removing Assad now really doesn't have a timetable. So it's kind of a back off from there. So this whole exercise and what we've been doing in Syria has turned out to be a complete waste of time, money, and lives. And there's no other way to look at it.
So now, but it sounds like kind of the context of what you're saying is the Americans and the Turks agree on all these things, but the Americans are kind of worried about the independence of Erdogan anyway.
Yeah. I would say that the Americans don't trust him at all, and they basically don't trust him because they realize that he's using the war against Assad and against ISIS in particular as a cover for the other things that he's getting up to. And plus, there's a long history of Erdogan supporting ISIS with weapons and allowing them to go into Turkey. And when I was in Istanbul last summer, there were ISIS people, not exactly all over the place, but they were around. And they were raising money, and they were using Istanbul as an R&R point for people who were injured or who are being trained and that kind of thing. This has been going on for quite a while.
And now, so if Obama's embedding special forces with the YPG and apparently with the Army of Conquest, Islamic Front, Ahrar al-Sham, Al-Qaeda Alliance in there somewhere, the mythical moderates somewhere next, standing next to them or something, then it sounds to me, and I know this is oversimplified or whatever, Phil, but it sounds like they're putting Americans at risk of getting bombed by our allies, the Turks, if they embed them with the YPG Kurdish group against the Islamic State, and they're risking getting our guys bombed by the Russians when they embed them with the mythical moderate Al-Qaeda guys against Assad. So, and it doesn't seem like they can do much good in either case as far as what their stated missions are. They look like they're just tripwires to me, but I don't know. Is that they're going to have arrangements with the Turks and the Russians to make sure?
Yeah, I think they probably have developed relationships with corresponding officers on the other side to keep that from happening. But you're right. I mean, there still is a huge risk. These bombing raids are not that accurate, and there's a huge risk that Americans are going to get killed in this kind of thing. It's the whole thing is kind of crazy. I think that they're envisioning these 60 or how many they're talking today about sending more people as forward spotters to make our bombings more accurate. I think that's part of what the agenda is. But the fact is, this whole exercise is doomed to fail. It's there is no realistic way to think that this is this makes any sense.
Yeah, I mean, they can keep the Islamic State out of Kurdistan, but they're not going to empower the Kurds. They can't. There's not enough of them anyway. They don't have the manpower, the firepower to go and quote unquote liberate Iraqi and Sunni Iraq and Syrian Sunnistan there from the Islamic State. I mean, they just don't have, and the reaction among the people, they'd just be driving them right into the Islamic State's arms anyway for being the other in the first place.
Yeah, our
might as well be Americans.
Our ability to influence these situations is nil. I mean, look at the situation in Iraq. Where how long have they been trying to recapture Ramadi? With U.S. advisors and U.S. support and everything like that. It's just somebody needs a real reality check. Somebody should go into the White House and grab that guy that pretends to be U.S. president and shake him around a little bit and say, this makes no sense from a U.S. perspective, and all you're going to do is kill more people.
Yeah, Mitchell Prothero is reporting yesterday in McClatchy newspapers that Marine Force Recon have been there fighting in Fallujah for a while now. And that's why they're doing better than the forces in Ramadi.
Yeah.
So, yep, no surprise there. Okay, now, man, we're almost out of time, but I like your daydream here about being the president and telling Netanyahu off. It's at uns.com, what Obama should have told Bibi. Go ahead.
Well, basically, he should have told Bibi to take a hike. I mean, you know, this whole visit by Bibi was completely unacceptable. This guy has interfered in our politics. He's abused the president personally. He's made fun of our senior government officials. He basically has exploited a fifth column in the United States to attack our institutions. This guy now wants $5 billion a year, and we'll probably get most of that. So I basically wrote a funny little sketch saying what Obama should have told Bibi, which was basically, you know, get the hell out of here.
Yeah. I like that. Now, $5 billion. And, you know, this is the thing of it, too. They announce, I guess he gets on the plane takes off, and then they put out that they're going to legalize 20,000 new settlements on the West Bank, Phil.
Yeah, that's right.
Just to smack Obama in the face as he's bowing down.
Yeah, and Obama, you know, has nothing to say to this. I mean, there's nothing. He knows that he basically has to put up with it. And I was most offended by Obama blaming the current violence in Palestine and Israel on the Palestinians. I mean, it's like, okay, this is a kind of a complex situation going on, but blaming it on the Palestinians is just such bullshit.
It is.
And yet our president, who should know better and does know better, comes out with it.
Yeah, I saw a thing the other day. Somebody sent me a Twitter argument he was in. Well, hey, maybe they wouldn't be occupied if they would stop stabbing the Israelis.
Yeah.
Getting cause and effect all backwards. And by the way, I screwed up my correction here. It's 2,200 new settlement units that they announced. I think I said 20,000. It was 2,000, but still.
Yeah, 2,200.
The effect of the smack in the president's face, and for that matter, the absurd Americans who support Israel anyway, in Netanyahu's words, there. It's still more or less the same velocity, I think.
Yeah, in my piece, I also cite Ron Lauder, who's head of the World Jewish Congress, who wrote an open letter to the president before the meeting with Netanyahu, saying, describing Netanyahu as a great statesman and someone who is intelligent and far-looking and everything like that. And of course, and my rejoinder to it was, yeah, he's also clinically insane.
Yeah, which, you know, that was what Yuri Avnery was saying. And I think Yuri Avnery, in his piece a couple of articles ago, was saying that, yeah, no, really. I mean, there are educated people who think he's got a real screw loose. And not just because they're offended about what he said, but his thought patterns as revealed by the things he said, you know?
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
He's certainly a crank, Phil. I'll settle for that.
Yeah, well, he's our crank, unfortunately.
Yeah, we're his anyway. All right, well, listen, thanks very much for coming back on the show. Appreciate it as always.
Okay, Scott. Bye-bye.
All right, y'all, that's Phil Giraldi. He's at uns.com, UNZ, uns.com. That's what Obama should have told Bibi. And then his other one is in the New York Times. We ran on antiwar.com the other day. America's establishment has embraced deep states. Right back after this. Hey, I'll check out the audiobook of Lou Rockwell's Fascism Versus Capitalism, narrated by me, Scott Horton, at audible.com. It's a great collection of his essays and speeches on the important tradition of liberty. From medieval history to the Ron Paul Revolution, Rockwell blasts our status enemies, profiles our greatest libertarian heroes, and prescribes the path forward in the battle against Leviathan. Fascism Versus Capitalism by Lou Rockwell for audiobook. Find it at Audible, Amazon, iTunes, or just click in the right margin of my website at scotthorton.org. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for Liberty.me, the great libertarian social network. They've got all the social media bells and whistles. Plus, you get your own publishing site, and there are classes, shows, books, and resources of all kinds. And I host two shows on Liberty.me. Eye on the Empire with Liberty.me's Chief Liberty Officer Jeffrey Tucker every other Tuesday, and The Future of Freedom with FFF founder and president Jacob Hornberger every Thursday night, both at 8 Eastern. When you sign up, add me as a friend on there, scotthorton.liberty.me. Be free. Liberty.me. All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. Yeah, the damn website is broken. I know. Sneaker's going to fix it when he gets around to it. That's basically how it works. Well, and I guess it takes a while even when he's getting around to it. I don't know. What the hell do I know? I just know it ain't working. But anyway, I know it'll work again at some point. And I'll settle for that, because who cares, man? I'll be fine. Don't worry about it. That's my theory. All right. So, yeah, man, I got some complaints to complain for you if you want to hear some. Scores killed as the Islamic State battles the Taliban in southern Afghanistan. ISIS beheads 7 Shia in Zabul province. The Taliban was already facing infighting with a rival faction over its leadership, but now seems to be facing a much more serious threat in the southern Zabul province, where battles have raged over the past several days between the Taliban and the local ISIS affiliate. Death tolls are still uncertain, but an estimated 80 people have been killed in the past few days, as clashes have grown ever more violent and as the Islamic State is increasingly insinuating itself into the picture, targeting the main Taliban movement amid existing clashes with its breakaways. Zabul province, like much of southeastern Afghanistan, is dominated by the Taliban, with militants going back and forth across the border into neighboring Pakistan routinely and carrying out attacks on targets in both countries. ISIS seems determined to cement its presence there, not only fighting with the Taliban, but also carrying out the beheading of 7 Shia, who they'd kidnapped in recent days. Afghanistan's Shiite Hazara minority is a popular target of attacks for Islamist groups trying to make a name for themselves. Christ's sake. That's Jason Ditz at news.antiwar.com. You know, Margulies was saying, yeah, who do you think sent the Islamic State to go fight the Taliban? I guess the Saudis, but I thought the Saudis liked the Taliban. The Saudis have a falling out with the Taliban? So now they're sending the Islamic State to Afghanistan? You can understand why Iran's been kissing America's ass since 2001. You know, with the common would-be enemies, must be hard to be an Iranian trying to keep track of when America's fighting wars for them or fighting wars for Al-Qaeda, our enemy and theirs. Sometimes it's all and both at once. And neither. No, never neither. Doctors Without Borders spurns Pentagon offer of money to repair bombed hospital. Medicines Sans Frontiers says policy is not to take government money. Beat it. They were quoted to have said, no. Doctors Without Borders has announced it is rejecting a Pentagon offer to pay for the reconstruction of the Kunduz, Afghanistan hospital that a U.S. warplane bombed last month, an attack which killed at least 30 civilians. That's, again, Jason Ditz, news.antiwar.com. And good for them. And by the way, did you see the Glenn Greenwald article where he was mocking and ridiculing all of the journalists who announced, before any information was out, that everybody knows that it must have been an accident. It absolutely had to have been an accident. Because, why? Because I'm from here. And so, therefore, the government of where I'm from must be the good guys. Because journalism in America is written by grown-up children. That's why. And I like how Glenn Greenwald has their ass and quotes all their tweets and, you know, reproduces the screenshots of the tweets and everything and names them and shames them and says, look, everybody, look how wrong this guy was. When now the official explanation at this point is, yeah, we did it on purpose, but that's because we thought that there was a Pakistani spy in there and that there was some Taliban in there with him. Oh, that's a great defense for attacking a hospital and burning a bunch of little kids to death in their hospital beds. Well, you see, that's the American way. That's not collateral damage. That's putting firepower on targets. That's what we do. You can watch all about it on TV. They'll never talk about why anybody's being killed, but they'll only go, check out the specs of the C-130 gunship. It's badass. Look at this Vulcan cannon. And then you're just left to assume that, well, of course, they would only ever shoot a Vulcan cannon at someone who really, really had it coming, right? Never mind that. Check out the joystick that controls the bomb bay door on this B-1. It's new and improved over the latest version. Next on the Discovery Channel, ghost stories. Afghanistan is haunted. Somebody keeps killing them. Nobody knows why, but they're haunting the land, trying to get a little bit of peace. Alright, I'm sorry. That wasn't really funny. Check this out, man. Don't you always hear this? Hey, Israel is the only democracy in the Middle East. Hey, Israel, they're Fort Apache out there. They are a Western outpost in the East. You got to respect the danger they're putting themselves in out there on the front lines against that other alien civilization east of there in Mordor, where the shadows lie. But then you look at actual Israeli society and you go, oh, wait a minute. Half the people that live under their power live under martial law and have no right to vote whatsoever. Some democracy. You see, right there, end of the argument. It's not a democracy at all. Like, yeah, Texas in the days of the one-party white primary system. Yeah, that's democracy. Unless you're a Democrat or black. I mean, unless you're a Republican or black. It was like that for 100 years. Anyway. They're not allowed to vote. They have no self-government at all. The Palestinian Christians and Muslims. And so really, I guess it's just a racial supremacy thing. The American identification with the Israelis. Because the super majority of Americans claim to be Christians. They just can't identify with Palestinian Christians at all. What? You say they're Christians? Oh, but they're Arabs? Nope. Their humanity goes from, like, huh? To right back down to zero again. The Israelis, on the other hand, they're from Europe. The Jews, they're from Europe. They look more like American, like the American majority, anyway. They're white. So really, white supremacy trumps Christian solidarity. Right? Is that the way it works? It must be fun being a born-again Christian, trying to make sense out of all your insane beliefs. Jesus, Armageddon keeps not having happened. I thought it was going to happen 1988. I thought it was going to happen 1994. I thought it was going to happen 1999. I thought it was going to happen 2001. Jesus, I don't remember all the different times I thought it was going to be the end of the world, and yet it never comes, and yet look at all the dead people I helped get killed cheerleading this crap. Cheerleading chaos throughout the Middle East. In the name of a bunch of magic stuff that never happens. Just real human beings laying down, dying in horrible pain. Anyway, here's some of these Western Enlightenment values we share with the Israelis. Ready? Poll. Most Jewish Israelis say terrorists should be killed on the spot. And they're not talking about in self-defense. Is it okay if someone is trying to murder you to kill them first? That's not the question. From the Times of Israel, right-wing paper. The question was, even if they've already been arrested and rendered helpless, they should be shot in the head on the spot. 57%. Hey, y'all, Scott here for Samurai Tech Academy at MasterSamuraiTech.com. Modern appliance repair requires true technicians who can troubleshoot their high-tech electronics. If you're young and looking to make some real money, or you've been at it a while and just need to keep your skills up to date, Samurai Tech Academy teaches it all. And they'll also show you the business, how to own and run your own. Take a free sample course to see how easily you can learn appliance repair from MasterSamuraiTech.com. Use coupon code Scott Horton for 10% off any course or set of courses at MasterSamuraiTech.com. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. This nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone. We are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at ScottHorton.org or TheWarState.com. All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. So, tonight there's going to be another Republican debate. And, you know, I guess I owe people an explanation. People ask me, damn, why do you hate Rand Paul so much? You hate him so much. I think maybe you're the one with the personal problem rather than him with the political problem, you know, kind of thing. Maybe it does seem that way. I hate even talking about it. I hate even caring at all. However, I just kind of can't get over it. Like I was telling Ernie on his show earlier, everything that happens to me is just another, I mean, everything virtually that happens is just another lost opportunity by Rand Paul to say something smart and good and great. I mean, our American foreign and domestic policy on every front is an absolute nightmare, right? The national debt, all the wars, the healthcare crisis, the everything. And here's a guy who grew up at the knee of Ron and Lou and Murray. Here's a guy who not only must understand the genius of liberty and allowing it to work and how it works, but must be able to teach it too, has to, knows it so well. He ought to be as good as any of us on teaching liberty to other people. And guess what? Every damn thing our government does is anti-liberty. Everything they do is just another perfect softball pitch for Rand to knock out of the park. Let me tell you why these guys are goofballs, okay? Here's what they think is going to happen, and then here's what they do. We ought to call the whole thing off, save that money so that you can afford to send your own kid to college without having to take out a bunch of loans in the first place. Blah, etc. The whole economy debate last time, it was all about the economy. You and me and everyone knows exactly what Ron Paul would have said. There's no way to address the economy until we address the world empire. We cannot be a constitutional limited republic and a world empire at the same time. We cannot be a free society and a global and domestic hegemon. Bring the soldiers home, decentralize, repeal, cut costs, big time. You know, Rick Perry's famous moment was he couldn't remember what three cabinet positions he wanted to abolish, which, you know, might as well have been a stunt just to take the spotlight off of Ron, who was saying, I want to abolish five of them, and he could name them, and he really meant it. And said, first year in office, we're going to cut $1 trillion off the budget. Have fun getting jobs. We are going to cut departments and agencies off the face of the earth. Bye. Because that's the only way to shore up Social Security. We have to bring every single soldier home from every foreign base we got. Because that way to make sure that your Grammy's Medicare check, you know, it's still worth the dollars printed on the damn thing. That's what Ron would have said. Abolish the empire to shore up the welfare state. Oh, and let's start transitioning away from a welfare state and giving the young an opportunity to opt out, etc. like that. That's what Rand could be selling. He could be moving that ball forward by a long way. But nope. He's running as Jeb Bush. The whole die was cast long ago, really. But you can see the expression of it perfectly in the first debate, where Donald Trump, they attacked Donald Trump, and the first thing that Rand did was say, teacher, I'm telling on him. He refuses to take the loyalty oath to the Republican Party. So Trump is saying, hey, I'm the outsider here to clean things up in this party that you guys, that's run by a bunch of guys that you guys can't, that you voters can't stand anymore. And Rand was saying, and I am Mitch McConnell's teacher's pet, here to protect and defend the interest of the old party establishment that you all hate. What? Everyone who's a governor or a senator is losing. The two who aren't are way out ahead. You know why? I mean, in hell, especially when the establishment choice candidate is another Bush. And so you could be any idiot and tell the Rand Paul campaign that from the very beginning he should be saying, yeah, sure, I'm a senator, but I'm a Paul. I'm a far more of an outsider than any New York billionaire. I'm the true outsider in this campaign. I'm the one who really wants to shake things up. I'm the one who's really outside the old consensus of bailouts and wars that you're all sick and tired of. But no, no. He announces his nomination in front of an aircraft carrier. Ron Paul's son. In the middle of a war, and he tried, did he see the thing with Sean Hannity? He did an interview on Sean Hannity where Sean Hannity's saying, don't you hate Iran and the evil nuclear deal? And Rand, oh, and he's so patronizing and just, ugh. But anyway, and he's going, oh yeah, no, boo-hoo Iran and the boo-hoo their nuclear program, and we should not negotiate with our enemies. What? Now you're Dick Cheney, not just Jeb Bush. Now you're Dick Cheney. Shouldn't be negotiating with these bad guys. Like this. And then he tries to spin it into some sort of Ron Paulian form by way of splitting the difference somehow and says, at the very end of the interview, when it's, they're going to commercial, they're done. And he goes, oh yeah, and we shouldn't be back in Al-Qaeda in Syria like some want to do right now. And Sean Hannity goes, what? Who wants to do that? Anyway, we gotta go. Thanks, Rand. Oh yeah, okay. What a brilliant idea. Instead of just telling the truth about Iran and their nuclear program and the nuclear deal and leading, being peaceful, he buys in to all the war party Israeli propaganda about Iran first, only to then try to spin it to opposition to what Rubio and Hillary want to do in Syria right now. But way too late, with no time to explain what he's talking about and with no consistency of position. You know, from Hannity's point of view, yeah, you're good. You hate Iran just like me, right? Yep. But wait, you don't hate Assad in Syria just like me? Huh? So, but he's not even making a point. He's not even proving a point. He's not even trying. He's only failing. Unbelievable to me. You know, I used to drive around in my taxi cab. Okay, this is like 15 years ago. I drive around in my taxi cab and I give people printouts of Ron Paul's speeches and go, check it out. There's one good congressman out of all of them. He's so rad. Check out this speech. It's called, Sorry, Mr. Franklin. We're all Democrats now. You gotta check it out, everybody. And now look at us stuck with his bastard son. Oh, I shouldn't have said that, but his horrible one. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new ebook by longtime Future Freedom author Scott McPherson. Freedom and Security, the Second Amendment and the Right to Keep and Bear Arms. This is the definitive principled case in favor of gun rights and against gun control. America is exceptional. Here the people come first, and we refuse to allow the state a monopoly on firearms. Our liberty depends on it. Get Scott McPherson's Freedom and Security, the Second Amendment and the Right to Keep and Bear Arms on Kindle at Amazon.com today. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop. which is, by the way, what he's doing right now, selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com. All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. And yeah, look, I'm real sorry about the site being down and all the feeds being broken. I know a lot of people can't listen to the live show. But working on it. The good news is, you know, the Kickstarter we did for the, to get all the interviews up on YouTube, the guy that we hired to do that ended up not doing it. So, but then what happened was when I was trying to find a new guy, a volunteer just did it himself without even me asking, basically, or I guess maybe I told him, yeah, well, this is the outline of the job. And then blam, he just went and did it and said, he's not going to charge me anything. No problem. Happy to help. Now, you know, I'm kind of waiting on my server guy who's always very busy doing other things, but I need to finish reconciling all the interview entries on antiwar.com/radio with all the entries on scotthorton.org/interviews. And there are still some on the former that are not on the latter. And I don't know how many, and I can't write a script fancy enough to make sure, but once that's done, then the Kickstarter project, I mean, will be done. The YouTube project, this guy's going to finish doing it for free and has already proven that. He knows what the hell he's doing, which is very nice. I'm very appreciative of that. And that frees us up, that $1,000. I can either, and I'll email everyone who did the Kickstarter and ask you whether everybody wants your money back, or what would probably be better for all of us would be if we can buy a new server with it. Because that's what Sneaker, the server master, says, is that your server is a piece of crap. That's why I had the site and the audio on two different servers up until recently anyway, was because of aftermath of the last crash. So I really need some 2015 model servers. So I'm going to take the Kickstarter money. Once the YouTube thing is done, I'm going to take that Kickstarter money and I'm going to spend it on a new server. Actually, I guess I could go ahead and do that now because I already know that the Kickstarter, that the YouTube guy is going to do the thing for free. He's a, you know, he's bugging me going, hey, can I finish helping you yet? So I don't think there's any problem there. I didn't mean that in a negative way, bugging me if you're listening, dude. I meant that in a happy way. So I guess maybe I can do that. Go ahead and get that server. Try to apply that money toward, I really need two. But anyway, if you want to donate, well, the site is down, so you can't go to scotthorton.org/donate. But if you want to help support later on, you can do that. And if you're listening to a recording of this later on when the site's back up, then you can, again. And also, my email address is scott@scotthorton.org, and that's my PayPal address, scott@scotthorton.org. And that'll still work if anybody wants to help support. I know you get frustrated as hell when the site don't work, and especially when it says forbidden, and which is a weird way of saying error or 405 or whatever the crap, but I am sorry about the inconvenience, everybody, but anyway, I hope you keep listening to the show. Alright, now, listen, it's not just that I hate everything about Rand Paul, it's a bunch of specific stuff, like the fact that he stabbed his father in the back. He stabbed the American hero, Ron Paul, the greatest, most libertarian parliamentarian in the history of all of humankind. His own son endorsed Romney during the convention, before the whole process was finished. His mom is on tape saying, yeah, he called and gave us 30 minutes notice. So that was no Ron Paul, Rand Paul grand strategy there to do something smart. I'll tell you exactly what it was. Rand Paul told you exactly what it was at the time. Some idiot had given him the impression that he had a spot for Paul. He had a chance, I meant to say, he had a chance at Paul Ryan's losing spot for vice president on the Romney ticket, which any idiot could have told you that Barack Obama was going to win that election and that Paul Ryan was just going to be, you know, the forgotten vice presidential candidate loser in this. He was willing to stab Ron in the back for that. And then You'd have had to been a damn fool to think that Romney was going to offer the vice presidency to Rand just because somebody said that. What about all the reasons why that's never going to happen? Paul Ryan is just as pretend a fiscal conservative as far as the image goes. What's useful to the Romney campaign, Karl Rove and the masters of the Republican Party to bring on Rand? He would have had to been brain dead to think that that was going to happen. And yet it was for the non-chance at the losing spot of Paul Ryan's vice presidential place on the losing Romney ticket, Rand Paul stabbed his father in the back. That's not nothing. In fact, a good friend of mine said, oh, that was the last time I ever even paid attention to Rand Paul. I've had absolutely no use for him whatsoever after that. You'll betray your family. What are the rest of us to you? Nothing. And then he blames Islamic extremism, radical Islam, for the cause of September 11th and America's defensive war on terrorism. He's bad on Bradley Manning and Edward Snowden, says they both belong in prison. He's bad on the empire of bases, on the world empire. He does not question whether global security is the job of the government of the United States of America. Up until 2 weeks ago, he was for staying in Afghanistan indefinitely to fight against terrorism. He obviously could flip-flop right back again on that at any moment. As soon as conventional wisdom said so, he came out horrible on Russia. Before, he had said some sensible things about the Russians and about how NATO expansion was provoking them and that kind of thing. But now, no, oh no, it's Ronchevist, right-wing Putin, recreation of the Russian Empire, and must be contained. Absolutely horrible on Israel. Even lies to this day, pretending that he never said that America should cut foreign aid to Israel. Even though all you gotta do is put it in Google and it's right there. In his own words, he wrote articles called, Yes, Israel Too. No, that's not the exact title, but yeah, it was in his original budget. Cut all foreign aid, yes, including the Israelis. And he spun it in a pro-Israel way at the time. They should be independent from us anyway, or whatever. But nope, he will lie to you and pretend he never even said that in the freaking first place. He's also has announced, just almost in a Logan Act kind of way, that we have a permanent alliance with Israel, and any attack on Israel, and it will be considered an attack on the United States. And so that we have no treaty with Israel, no mutual defense pact. They don't fight in our wars, that we fight for them in the Middle East. But Americans are bound to fight and die in any war that Israel might get us directly into, like, say, for example, with Iran. If Israel attacks Iran and Iran retaliates, America is then bound to jump into the war on Israel's side, according to the son of Ron. Absolutely horrible on Iran sanctions. His excuse for being horrible on Iran sanctions was that I just want to strengthen the president's hand to get a good deal. And then when Obama got a great deal, he came out against it. And you could all tell, everybody could tell, for no honest reason, because politics, that's why. Because sucking up to Adelson. And in fact, it was after his meeting with Adelson at the restaurant where he went and kissed the ring. And somebody should report this. I don't know it. I'm only speculating, but someone should find this out. It's a 99% guarantee that Adelson retracted his threat to run an anti-Paul jihad throughout the campaign if Rand would at least take Adelson and Israel's side on Iran. And Rand agreed. That was the ceasefire terms. It's obvious to me. I'm not claiming I know that it's a fact, but it's pretty damn clear that that is what happened. That's how willing Rand Paul is to sell out truth and peace. Oh, and think of the ass he could be kicking as the only Republican who knows what the hell he's talking about and is willing to fight about it on the Iran issue. Man, that could be some great TV. Oh, and Iraq War III and Kurdistan and Guantanamo and accountability for torture and the drug war and Iraqi refugees and drone strikes, domestic drone strikes, VAT taxes. Oh, man. Hey, all Scott here. If you're like me, you need coffee. Lots of it. And you probably prefer it tastes good, too. Well, let me tell you about Darren's Coffee Company at darrenscoffee.com. Darren Marion is a natural entrepreneur who decided to leave his corporate job and strike out on his own, making great coffee. And Darren's Coffee is now delivering right to your door. Darren gets his beans direct from farmers around the world. All specialty, premium grade, with no filler. Hey, the man just wants everyone to have a chance to taste this great coffee. darrenscoffee.com. Use promo code Scott and you get free shipping. darrenscoffee.com. Hey, y'all, guess what? You can now order transcripts of any interview I've done for the incredibly reasonable price of $2.50 each. Listen, finding a good transcriptionist is near impossible, but I've got one now. Just go to scotthorton.org/transcripts, enter the name and date of the interview you want written up, click the PayPal button, and I'll have it in your email in 72 hours max. You don't need a PayPal account to do this. Man, I'm really going to have to learn how to talk more good. That's scotthorton.org/transcripts. All right, that was most of them. There were a couple more. Anyway, so Rand Paul sucks, so that's why I always talk so bad about him. Oh, and I know everybody knows he sucks, but most people don't care that he sucks. I care that he sucks because, oh, the possibilities. Can you imagine if he would just do the obvious thing and just pretend to be his dad, only younger and in the Senate? If he actually believed in libertarianism and wanted to teach it to the world the way his father did. Oh, man. The lost opportunity here is just world historical level blunder, man. It's a shame. That's what it is. Anyway. So, hey, man, yeah, I don't really want to talk about that. I don't care about that. Let's talk about the rancher thing, man. Did you see this? Did you hear about this? I want to talk about some more. Idaho Statesman. Idaho rancher's wife. Quote, I saw them murder my husband. Oh, I guess they got a statement from her after she recovered from the heart attack she had at the scene. From the trauma that the deputy sheriffs, a.k.a. the Nazi Gestapo death squad, put her through. Oh, come on. It's only a Nazi Gestapo death squad if it happens in somebody else's country. When cops murder innocent Americans, it's called heroism. It's called doing my job. It's called law enforcement. This is by Cynthia Sewell at the Idaho Statesman, idahostatesman.com. The family of an Adams County rancher involved in an encounter with two sheriff's deputies say the deputies killed him in a, quote, completely unjustified shooting. Survivors, hey, let's give this writer credit, this newspaper credit, from even covering this story from the victim's point of view at all. Much less with the lead. Family members have shared with the Statesman their account of what happened last Sunday night. The account is in written statements prepared with attorneys the family hired after the incident. A video statement Donna Yantis made from her Boise hospital bed, and a draft transcript the lawyers prepared of one family member's account of what happened. The Statesman also interviewed several family members, including Rowdy Paradis, a nephew of the couple's, who said he witnessed the shootings. Law enforcement should be trained to de-escalate situations, said Rowdy Paradis. In this case, I stood 10 feet away and watched two deputies escalate the situation and needlessly kill a man. Sheriff Ryan Zolman did not respond Saturday to an emailed request for comment or on the family's account or to a message left with a sheriff's dispatcher. Here's what the family says happened on November the 1st. A phone call at dinner. The Yantises, Paradis, and a family friend, Joe Rumsey, were finishing dinner at about 6:45 p.m. Sunday in the Antis' home near milepost 142 of U.S. 95, about 6 miles north of Council. An Adams County Sheriff's Office dispatcher called. One of the family's bulls had just been hit by a car on the highway, and the Yantises needed to go take care of it. In rural open range, collisions between vehicles and livestock are not uncommon. Ranchers often must put down the injured animals. Jack Yantis had unfortunately done it before. Yantis had raised and tamed... Anyway, it's a gigantic freaking bull. He goes down... The bull was hurt, had a broken leg, had been charging at people, and then went and laid down by the end of the driveway. Yantis told Paradis to get a rifle, the family's skid steer loader, a small front-end loader, and a chain. Paradis, in turn, asked his aunt to get the family's .204 caliber rifle and bring it to the road. Yantis took a small all-terrain vehicle, in this case a four-wheeler, down the driveway and parked it on the highway facing the animal. While Paradis was getting the skid loader, the deputies started shooting at the bull. At least one of them had a semi-automatic rifle, perhaps an AR-15, an adaptation of the military M-16. They opened up with their pistols and their M-16s before Jack got there, Paradis said. That's an inhumane deal. This is a 2-ton Angus bull that's pissed off, he's hurt and psychotic. It was blazing down there. It sounded like World War II on this bull, because they got him charging at everyone again. Paradis drove the skid loader down the driveway and parked it on the highway. The bull was lying on the pavement. His wife walked the rifle to her husband. Jack Yantis was standing about 4 feet from the bull, aiming the rifle at the back of the bull's head. His back was to the two deputies, who were standing in the far lane facing each other as if they were having a conversation. I put the skid loader's lights on him and the bull, and he lined up to shoot the bull in the back of the head and put him out humanely, Paradis, that's the wife, said. Oh, the nephew, said. Deputies shoot Yantis. The rifle's barrel was about 2 feet from the bull, and Jack Yantis's finger was on the trigger. Everything was going as planned. I did not notice any conversation at all between Jack Yantis and the deputies, Paradis said. Then the one cop turned around and grabbed his shoulder and jerked him backwards. The deputy came from behind, spun Yantis around, and grabbed the rifle scope, Paradis said. The deputy pushed Yantis. The rifle was still in Yantis' hands, its barrel pointed at the ground. Yantis was trying to regain his footing. Paradis said he does not know whether the rifle fired, but he thinks it might have discharged accidentally when the deputy grabbed Yantis and spun him around, or when one of the deputy's bullets pierced Yantis' hand holding the rifle, hitting the gun and damaging it. One deputy began shooting at Yantis. The other deputy started shooting. Donna Yantis said she and Paradis screamed at the deputies to stop. Shot in the chest and abdomen, Jack Yantis fell to the ground. Neither deputy went to check on him. Paradis and Donna Yantis started running toward him. And then they threatened me and my nephew, threw us on the middle of Highway 95, searched us and handcuffed us, and wouldn't let us go take care of Jack, Donna Yantis said. Paradis said one deputy pointed his gun at his head. Donna Yantis had a heart attack. Sometime later, she was taken by ambulance to Midvale and then by helicopter to another hospital in Boise. A family friend had been near the wrecked car when the shooting started, ran toward Jack. The deputies handcuffed him, too. One deputy said he had been grazed by a bullet, Rumsey said. I asked him where. I said, that's bullshit. There was no blood, no torn thread, no powder burned. There was nothing. After the shooting, Paradis said the deputy's demeanor was smug and, quote, almost celebratory. And you know that they put almost in there because of their own cognitive dissonance, because they just can't bear to say celebratory, plain and simple with a capital C. They were having fun. They got to murder a man for fun. They weren't almost celebratory. There, maybe there were stifling obviously stifling or attempting to stifle their joyous mood, if you want to put it that way. You know, like in fake videos of Palestinians celebrating 9/11. Anyway, a deputy walked over, pulled Yantis' rifle from under his body, and threw it into the grass. There was no shootout. It was senseless murder, the Yantis' daughter, Sarah, told the Statesman. Meanwhile, the bull was still alive, slowly bleeding out on the highway. It lied there for 2 hours before it finally suffocated on the blood in its lungs. For those of you who care about innocent animal life that much more than innocent human life, throw that in there. Police, family, lawyers, seek witnesses. Anyway, I'm done here. That's basically the rest of it. There you go, IdahoStatesman.com. You know, as soon as you heard about this, guy goes down to shoot injured bull, ends up shot by deputies. You knew immediately it was all their fault and none his. Give me a break. Like he went down there to kill them. Only other alternative explanation, they murdered him. Because they wanted to. Because they like murdering people. Because they're murderers. Oh, and they'll get away with it too.